This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest today, the MVP of Super Bowl 25. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants. He was also a star running back with the St. Louis Cardinals. And many believe will eventually be a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He certainly should be. Otis O.J. Anderson joins me on Sports Jam. Great to have you on the show, O.J.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
We have a lot to talk about with the current Giants team, but I want to start off with the glory days. Let's go back to Super Bowl 25, played at Tampa Stadium in Florida on January 27th of 1991. Now, before the Super Bowl even started, we knew it would be something special. It came during the Gulf War. The late Whitney Houston sang a memorable and powerful version of the Star-Spangled Banner with the Florida Orchestra, arranged, by the way, by jazz musician John Clayton. What was going through your mind, O.J., when you heard Whitney sing? And did you know that this would be a magical day for you, going on to rush for more than 100 yards and a touchdown and win the MVP?
Well, for one, we didn't know Whitney was performing, and after hearing that she was and seeing her, we as a team was very excited because she's one of our own. You know, she's from New Jersey, and to have somebody of that magnitude to perform was just an incredible day. And as far as my performance, when I came out of University of Miami in 79, I predicted that if I played in a Super Bowl, and it was in the state of Florida, and I was the featured running back, I would win MVP. 4 years later, that's what happened. But prior to that, in 89, the Super Bowl was at Joe Robbins Stadium. And I was the feature back for the Giants that year, and we lost to the LA Rams with a Flip Anderson, an incredible catch that sealed the game for them. And sitting on my stool, I was kind of in disbelief and just had my hands on my face, and Maurice Cawthon was sitting across from me, and I said, "You know, Mo," I said, "I guess my prediction would never come true." He said, "What was that?" And then I told him about the prediction I had about being in the Super Bowl and being featured running back and what the results would be. And he said, "Well, you know, next year the Super Bowl is in Tampa, Florida." And I said, "For real?" He said, "Yes." I said, "If that's the truth, then we are going." So when we was in San Francisco and Matt Barr was kicking the field goal and everybody was nervous, and I wasn't, because I knew it was my destiny, and I just needed to see it fulfilled. And once it went through the uprights, from that point on, destiny to be finalized.
O.J. Anderson, you and the New York Giants have just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do next?
I'm dedicating this win to our troops.
That Super Bowl 25 was one of the greatest games in football history, as the Giants beat the Buffalo Bills 20-19, forever known as the wide right game, because Bills place kicker Scott Norwood missed that last second field goal going wide of the uprights.
No good. Wide right. There are photographers and people all over the field, but the clock still has 4 seconds.
Take us into the huddle that game. You were such a powerful force on that day, not only winning the MVP, but everything was focused around you, Otis. They wanted to get you the ball. This was the game plan from Bill Parcells, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, Bill and late Ron Earhart got together the night before the game, and they pulled me into a meeting after we got done with our last meeting. And they set me down and said, "Hey, this is what we plan on trying to do. It's going to be a hot day on Sunday. We want to run the ball at least 20, 30 times. We want to give it to you between 20, 30 times. How do you feel and what you think?" I said, I welcome the opportunity. He said, "Well, then let's pick out what plays you prefer to run." I said, "Coach, keep me between the tackles. I don't want to try to get outside, take too much energy out of me." He said, I like that idea, but we got to try to sprinkle one or two plays to the outside just to keep them honest. And if you go back and look at the video, only two plays I try to get outside. One play down by the goal line when I got tackled for a loss. And the other one was when I turned the corner and hit Mark Kelso with the uppercut. Those are the only two plays I went outside wide. Everything else between tackles. So 20 of my 24 carries? Yeah, I think 22 of those 24 carries were all inside runs.
Second and four from the 19-yard line. Conlon had to come out, and Bailey spells him, and Anderson exploits a hole, takes it to the 36. The kind of charge the Giants are looking for, getting them out of a hole here. First down up at the 36-yard line.
Now, that's the kind of movement that a lot of people weren't sure that Otis Anderson still was capable of at this age. He wants to run off left guard. He sees nothing. He's going to jump all the way back around Riesenberg, the right tackle. And, of course, Mark Kelso makes a mistake here. He comes in and takes on Otis Anderson a little too high. I mean, that is just an excellent piece of running by O.J. Anderson.
You know, when you look at your highlight reel, you see that you really had a nose for the goal line. You scored a touchdown against the Broncos and in the first Super Bowl with the Giants there. And then you also had, obviously, a touchdown in the championship game in the Super Bowl and Super Bowl 25. In fact, you're one of only a handful of players that have scored touchdowns in two Super Bowls and win the Super Bowl MVP. What was it about your running style that enabled you to sniff out that goal line so well?
Well, I mean, I was 6'2", 230 pounds. And, you know, Parcells always said to me, at my height and weight, I can fall 1 yard. So if I don't have to go too far, I should be able to do well. And it's just the will to try to get it in there and to make a difference. And, you know, you got to have that savvy about yourself when you get down by the goal line. They say the red area. You got to punch it in, and you got to do whatever it takes to do it.
Touchdown, Anderson.
You had a great career with the St. Louis Cardinals. I don't think everybody realizes what a super back you were for that team. What was it about Parcells that gave you the energy to be the comeback player of the year, Super Bowl MVP, and a Giants legend?
Well, he challenged me after the 87 shortened season in 88. He told me I didn't have to come to training camp. I didn't have to come to off-season workout program, which gave everybody an edge and those who didn't go. And I decided to show up anyway because I knew that if I didn't, not only would I be giving up, I might not be on the roster. So I showed up and wasn't even on the workout list to get permission on the workout list and to go work out. So he challenged me mentally that way and every other way during that year and years after that. He just constantly let me know that there are running backs on this team that were equally ready to challenge me for my position. It was on me to try to maintain it. So I think that's the difference between football today and back in the era we played. Every position, you were challenged to maintain your job or try to hold on to your job from another player.
You were inducted into the Giants Ring of Honor in 2022. But what would it mean for you to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Well, it will complete my career. I think I look back at everything I accomplished. I never won a rushing title, but I lost it to a great individual, the late great Walter Payton, and by 5 yards. It would just be a complete completion. I mean, I've done everything you can do in the game in college, and looking at the pros, I was, you know, rookie of the year two times. Pro Bowler, starter in the Pro Bowl, comeback player of the year, over 10,000 yards, 86 touchdowns, Super Bowl MVP. I mean, I don't know. My resume says it all. It says, you know, give this man a chance to be in Canton.
Anderson received every conceivable honor accorded a rookie. Over 1,600 yards on the ground, 10 touchdowns, and an incredible future.
Yeah, it really does. Your resume does speak for itself. And a lot of times we hear about, well, you have to be a champion. Well, you got that checked off, right? And clutch, right? You were clutch. And when you were with the Cardinals, if it wasn't for the strike-shortened season, you would have had six straight 1,000-yard rushing seasons with the Cardinals, right? So an amazing career. Someone who has had an amazing career to this point, former Giants running back Saquon Barkley, now part of the Philadelphia Eagles, and he had a huge game last night, 255 yards in the Eagles win over the Rams. What are your thoughts on the Giants letting Saquon get away?
I think that the Jazz looked at the situation where that are we losing because we don't have a great running back? Are we losing because our quarterback and other problems we having is the reason? I think they did a blessing like the Cardinals did to me. When they looked at our team and said, "Are we better off with him or without him? And can we still win without him?" And the answer was yes. And the Giants felt that the price tag, I don't think it was too high. I just think that they knew that they couldn't give him what he needed as an offensive player. And if you look at what we're looking at now, you can see why the decision that they gave by letting him go and try to get a contract that serves him best, which he did, made a lot of sense. The guys are super athletes, one of the best running backs that have come through the league in a long time. And he's showing everybody why he was a number one draft pick, and that if you give someone of his caliber offensive line that's is totally 20 times better than what he had with the Giants, he could show off his true talent, and that's what he's doing.
Well, he had a super, run at Penn State, my alma mater, when before he came to the NFL. You had a great career at the University of Miami. When did you know, OJ, that you really had the goods, that you were going to be this tremendous player in the NFL?
I didn't know that. Miami program at the time was just starting up. We had our first winning season in 79 in over 20, 30 years. We had some great athletes that have come through the program and had done well in the NFL, but we just didn't get over the hump. One day, my junior year, I was working out during the off season, during the summer, and Ted Hendrick came through and Pete Banaszak came through. And I was sitting there and I knew who Ted was, but I wasn't sure who Pete Banaszak was. And when he left out, I went in the training room and asked the trainer. I knew one of the guys, who's the other guy? Was he his agent or his insurance guy? And they say, "No, that was Pete Banaszak." And I said, "Wow, if that's Pete Banaszak," and I knew who he was for the Raiders, I said, "If he can play pro football, I can." And from that point on, I believe that I had the moxie to go and be a professional.
Your debut, game one with the Cardinals. What do you remember about that? That was, you showed everybody you were ready for the NFL.
Yeah, I you know what? I just had a just some superb offensive lineman that was all pro. And just like Barkley, when you give a guy my status and a good offensive line and just feed us the football, we can make things happen. And that's what I had. I had Dan Dierdorf. I had Keith Workman. I had Bob Young. And I had Tom Banks. And three of those four names were all pro. So I walked into a system that had three all pro linemen and one that probably was second or third team. And I had a quarterback that was legendary in Jim Hart that could do almost every and anything with a football.
We're going to talk about your foundation in a moment, but you're to fans, you're one of the great Giants, right? So you got LT, you got Phil Simms and some others. When you see what's happening with the Giants franchise right now, are you as frustrated as the fans are?
I think frustration for the fans is totally different than the frustration of me as a player. I think frustration for the fan is the fact that they don't believe that the players are they're getting their money worth. They're paying for a product that's just unacceptable right now. Me, I look at it as a team that's in transition, it's definitely transitioning, trying to figure out the future and trying to see what players that and can we take to the future that's going to help us become what we used to be back in the day. And that's what I see. And I think with time and on the day bowl, I think that they can turn it around. But, you know, he's ahead of the table because if you look at what happened his first year there, we got in the playoff, won a playoff game, and then the table was set, you know, the bar was set high. And now every year after that, he was supposed to do that. But we all knew the team was transitioning. And just so happened that everything went right for him his rookie year. That's why he was rookie of the year, coach of the year that year. So, and I think that spoiled all of us, all of them who don't know football, that we should be that way year after year, year after year. But we weren't. We were not a good team. When they did it, just was a team that was fortunate. And now you're seeing what we all knew, management knew. That's why I don't think management is overly going crazy about whether or not they get rid of, you know, Dable and the general manager, because they knew that this was going to happen. Maybe not as bad as it happening, but I think they had to know that we were ahead of this table when Dable first took over. So I think it's only the third year into this. So, you know, got to give a man a chance. You can't keep firing coaches and general manager, or you're never going to grow, because every time you do it, you start over. And starting over is not always easy.
What is it about the Giants? When you've won your Super Bowls, you think about the Buffalo Bills were considered to be almost unbeatable when you beat them in Super Bowl 25. You had a game plan to give you the ball. The defense was so great. Eli Manning upsets the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You've had some of the greatest, really, upsets. I mean, I'm sure you didn't look at it as an upset when you beat the Bills, but most people thought the Bills were going to win that Super Bowl, I think. What was it about the Giants in your time and Eli Manning's time able to win the big game?
Because I think people play games on statistics. You know, football is not made. You can't win a football game because my stats are better than your stats. My one or two players are better than your one or two player. It's the fight in the dog, not the size. It's the fight. And each time we were considered underdog, but we knew what we had. We knew that we could compete, and we knew that if we played keep away, we had a chance of winning a football game, which is what we did. So we didn't do anything out of the ordinary other than not try to play fast like they were capable of playing fast. They play fast, we play slow. You know, it's the hare and the turd and the tortoise. You know, that's what it was. You know, and the slow man ended up winning, just like when they had the race with the hare and the tortoise. You know, he ended up winning it. So they got overconfidence because they beat us early during the year, and they came back in the Super Bowl with not the same two people that they faced, which was Sims and Rodney Hampton. They faced Jeff Hostel and myself, and I was old and over the hill, and Jeff was unproven. So they had the edge, and they felt they did, and they just overlooked us and underestimated us. And when you do that to a team and you let us hang around, good things happen.
Yeah, a lot of people might not remember, if you unless you're Giants fan, that Jeff Hostetler did play in the big Super Bowl game, and you know, came through in a big opportunity. A couple of things that I wanted to mention. A lot of people who know O.J. Anderson know that he is much more than a football player. I want to give you an example of what kind of person he is. Here's a story that I have learned from one of your friends. During COVID, one of your O.J. Anderson Scholarship Foundation high school recipients, Maya, never received her check, but some kind of paperwork snafu with her high school was the problem. So you were never told, but then you found out, and right away, you fixed this situation. You brought her back the following year at your annual scholarship charity golf event, told her story, and presented her the check retroactively, even though she's already completed her freshman year at Morgan State University with honors. Can you talk a little bit about Maya and the Scholarship Foundation in that day?
Well, you know, we just try to make a difference in kids' life. I was fortunate enough to have a scholarship going to Miami. Other than that, I would have never got into Miami if it wasn't for a scholarship. Just couldn't afford it. Sometimes kids fall on hard times. Sometimes their parents fall on hard times. But your kid be punished, you know, or penalized because her parents, you know, financially can't afford to send a kid who really wants to go to school. Should a kid be punished because somewhere down the line, the paperwork got screwed up, but yet the kid, you know, still deserves a right to be in school? And all we try to do is make the wrong right. All we try to do is shine a little light on a situation that was, unfortunate situation. But it didn't deter her, though. She kept fighting. She kept going. And, you know, rather than complain about what she didn't get, she kept focused on what she had. And that right there told us a true value of, it's not what you got, it's how you use what you have. And she was a perseverance person that showed us that. It was easy to give her and help her with some sort of financial help.
Helping others, being an ambassador, really, because when people see you, they get all excited. You take that role seriously, right? The fact that you represent the Giants forever, you also represent yourself.
Well, yeah, I have my own brand, and all you have is your name. I told a long time ago, your name is your brand, and how you decide to utilize that determines the kind of person people remember. You know, when you are born into this world, you have a date in which your life began, and there's a date in which your life ends, and in the middle is that dash. That dash is the story that needs to be told on how you will be viewed by people. I just try to make my dash be as memorable as I can make it so that when people talk about me, they'll talk about all the good things and the lives that I try to change and the people I try to help.
Yeah, helping others. Who was the first person that really helped Otis Anderson?
It goes back to when I was playing Little League football. It was a couple of people. A guy by the name of Dan Calloway, who was instrumental in helping kids who was from the projects a chance to try to play Little League football. And then it was this guy named Mel Obradovich, a white guy actually, who was from a more upscale area of West Palm Beach. But he loved kids and he loved helping kids. He had two sons that I played football with that was Dane and Doug, and his daughter Nedra was real close to my sister and would come and live in the projects on weekends and special days. And, you know, he just showed us that color was never an issue, and that if you did right, which went to school and try to do the best you can do, he would step in and just gave me another perspective on outside the project. Like, there's better things to accomplish outside the project. Don't let your environment control how you end up being. You control your environment. And he just showed me another side of what to look forward to rather than what the project was offering.
Your buddy Rock's a big fan of WBGO. Do you like jazz too?
I'm learning from Rock. I'm learning. He's good at it. You can't get a better friend than Rock. Actually, for putting this together, he's that kind of guy. But yeah, I'm getting into it. I'm more R&B kind of guy, old school R&B, and you know, jazz is a different type of ear you have to have for that. So yeah.
Well, you can get R&B too from Felix Hernandez on the weekends at WBGO. So there is a place for OJ Anderson on WBGO to listen in. How did you pump yourself up? Like, let's take us before you go out on the field for Super Bowl 25. How would you prepare? How would you get pumped?
Well, I try not to let the game be bigger than what it is. You know, I mean, they say it's just another game. Sure, it is another game, but the magnitude of which this game stands for changes it totally. So I just try to have a cool, calm demeanor. I try not to get overly excited about the moment, because you could get caught up in the moment. And I just try to let the game come to me and not try to rush the game.
Lawrence Taylor, Was he the best defensive player that you ever saw?
He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. That's why they label him the GOAT. That's why out of the greatest 100 players in the history of Giants, he's number one. There's a reason for that. So by far, he changed the game. He changed the way offenses block outside linebackers.
In your time with the Giants, who was your hangout buddy?
It was Tony Gabbert early on because Tony used to live in Missouri in the off season, so I used to see him when we played charity basketball game. Maurice Carthon took me in as a friend when I first got there and kind of showed me the ropes. And now one of my closest and best friend, he's like a little brother, Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker. Just an overall great kid, and I love him like a brother, and it's nothing I wouldn't do for him.
One of those helmets back there behind me, signed by Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker, as
Yes,
well
sir.
as OJ Anderson. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, OJ. What a great career. And I certainly hope we can say very soon, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Otis OJ Anderson. It would be well deserved. And keep listening now to WBGO. I think you're going to enjoy jazz and the rhythm and blues on the weekend. So we'll get you going. And thanks for being a great ambassador of the sport and being OJ.
Thank you for having me. And you and Rock, Rock felt this would be a great opportunity for me. And being a good friend that he is, I said sure. So, great interview. You're a great interviewer, and I appreciate it. One of the best.
My pleasure, OJ. Continued success.
Right. Likewise. Thank you.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.